a bunch of early days pre-IPO Netscape guys, and we did our part to help build the web, the technology that enabled the web 10 years ago. And the same thing that happened then, we think is going to happen now.
Unique and exciting new business models. They're all over the demo conference. PodTech had a chance to sample some of the innovations at the February gathering in Phoenix as John Furrier, Michael Johnson, and I, Jason Lopez, opened the mics on some intriguing companies and their ideas.
My name is Adam Lilling. I'm the co-founder and CEO of Bigger Boat. We're an entertainment search engine, initially for music and movies, but we're going to be adding video games, books, and television, not just for products, but for web search and event search over the coming weeks and months ahead. We have a destination site, biggerboat.com, but we're more about powering other sites with their entertainment search for their consumers.
Now, I can go online and I can find entertainment stuff, music, movies, whatever, with Google or even with any of the other search engines. Why not just use Google? What kind of advantages are you bringing to the marketplace?
Yeah, well, that's the infamous question. I mean, I use Google. I love Google for web search. In fact, Google Music Search isn't bad either. We do two things differently. One, we go across categories. So in a world where musicians are actors, where video games have music now from specific artists, books turn into movies, turn into video games, you need to be able to search across the categories. And not just across the categories, but within a category, you lose that rich information. Who is the engineer? Who is the producer? How do I search across all those rich attributes? And a Google can go to artist matches, album title matches, and song title matches. We just go much deeper and then dynamically filter for people.
Right. What about IMDb? I mean, that's a popular site that gives you all sorts of information about movies and, you know, and entertainers and that sort of thing.
Yeah, IMDb is a good, rich information. It's now owned by Amazon. We work with, we're going to be powering AllMusic and AllMovie.com. AllMovie.com is a competitor to IMDb. The difference is, and I did this on the presentation this morning at Demo, was you type in George Lucas and Steven Spielberg and you're not going to find anything except for Steven Spielberg works, and it's not even his top ones. It's very hard for IMDb that has rich data to actually have a good search across it. You could type in one attribute, the person or the title of the movie, and get the result. But if you want to dive any deeper than that, except for a one-person search, you're not going to be able to do it, and you're definitely not going to be able to filter.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like one thing that you're hitting on, Adam, is the sale, in a sense, of people's time. It is the information, obviously. That's what they're looking at. But you're really saving people a lot of time, and that is one of the big gripes that a lot of people have about the Internet, about searching, is that if you really want to delve deeply and quickly into something, it's probably going to be a pretty tough process to find an engine that can do that for you.
Yeah, and in I guess internet speak, we call it relevance these days, because for us, you can get back 1,000 results, but if it's the most relevant, don't come first. And if you have something that really does have 1,000 results and you want to be able to refine it quickly, you got to have an engine that lets you discover as much as it needs to search. And we've tried to create the user experience so that not only can you find it, but here's every physical and digital retailer that will sell it to you. We don't take a transaction, but here's the DVD, the CD, the cassette, vinyl, movie on demand, ringtone, digital download, all organized by this works on an iPod, this is a Windows Media, this is used from half.com, so that a consumer is always one click away from just getting the entertainment they want.
Okay. Well, Adam, thank you so much for stopping by.
I appreciate the time.
Oh, certainly.
We're here with Multiverse Network. You guys are in Mountain View, I heard that.
Yeah, we're sort of in the heart of the Googleplex. Google is taking over all the buildings around us, and we're this last bastion of non-Googletude.
I'm in Palo Alto, so I know the area down there pretty well. Multiplayer gaming is really killer. My kid is all over World of Warcraft, RuneScape, but I actually did a podcast with Fatality at Sundance, who's the world champion gamer, as you know. Mm-hmm. And gaming's a huge thing. Huge phenomenon on the entertainment side.
Yeah.
But on the technical side, it's revolutionary. There's a whole new breed of developers, media developers, game developers,
absolutely,
whatever you want to call them. You guys have a great product for them. Talk about what you're doing.
Well, we are trying to make it easier for just those guys to get into the massively multiplayer online game space, the MMO space. Right now, it costs about $20 million, $10 to $20 million, maybe as much as $50 million to make one of these MMOs. So indie developers are completely barred entry into coming into this space. Only the big guys can compete. So we figured, okay, let's build the tools and the technology needed to let those guys get into this space, create games for way less money, and have them bring their creativity and their wild, weird ideas into this space, so we get more than just the Men in Tights games. But God bless them. I enjoy, you know, World of Warcraft. I'm a big fan of that. But we want to open it up to indies to get in and bring their...
Talk about that indie market. I mean, it takes a ton of money, as you mentioned, on stage, $50 million to do a massive multiplayer game. But people like in Second Life are developing their own code, in Second Life as an example.
Right.
There are people who don't mind coding.
Mm-hmm.
So now an entrepreneur in the garage, so to speak, can develop an application. Talk about that whole trend and where you see that going.
I think it's a trend that we've seen play out before in another market. We're a bunch of early days, pre-IPO Netscape guys. And we did our part to help build the web, the technology that enabled the web 10 years ago. And the same thing that happened then, we think is going to happen now, which is you change the economics of being able to create online content so that it's not just AOL, CompuServe, and Genie 10 years ago. Suddenly you've got the web, anybody can put together a website, which changes the economics, lets guys like Yahoo, Google start out in dorm rooms and garages and build huge, big old companies. We're going to see the same thing here with massively multiplayer online games.
Let's get Bill in here, who's the CEO. Bill, John Furry with PodTech.
Okay.
We're a podcast that's very popular. Put that on you. I want to talk about this gaming because...
For a technical audience or a non-technical audience?
Well, we get about millions of people a month who listen to the podcast, so it's like global market. A lot of game developers. I did a podcast at Sundance with Fatality, who's the world champion gamer,
right.
And got a huge following in the podcasting community and iPod generation. So gaming is not only changing games and entertainment. The software world's going this way. The massive multiplayer game is our world, the internet. So how do you guys see this evolving in terms of these developer community that's out there? Obviously, people want to play... in these multiplayer environments, maybe even for commerce. Look at Second Life. They've had huge success. My friend Eric Rice had a New Year's Eve party. A ton of people came. He built a bar. One was sold in Miami for $150,000. I mean, virtual economies.
Right.
Where's this all going?
Well, I think that's big. I think the short-term trends that we're already seeing with games in Asia are games that where they're free to start playing, and then you pay as you go. And there's two models there. There's indirect through advertising. And you see companies like Massive Incorporated and others that are building ad networks for in-game advertising. And the other thing we're seeing is in-game commerce or in-game transactions where I start for free, but maybe I can buy a nicer sword, or maybe I can get into an advanced level, or maybe I can, you know, play with only other kinds of people if I put in some money. So we're seeing a lot of that in Asia. People are starting to try that in the United States. Three Rings Entertainment has a new game, Bang Howdy, coming out after their hit Puzzle Pirates. And they're trying this start for free and pay as you go model. So I think the key to that, that we fit in, is you got to lower the cost of these games from $55 million down to something more reasonable so people can experiment. People can build a game, and if people come and start playing it, then they can monetize it through these other techniques.
I mean, this is the fact right now. We are living in an Internet 2.0, Web 2.0, whatever you want to call it these days. Everyone, more people are connected to more things.
Right.
I mean, my podcast, podtech.net, started out from nothing, zero advertising, for free service, now millions of downloads a month, huge global reach, people having mashups, get-togethers, meetups.
Right.
You know, the traditional models are breaking down.
And that's the other key thing. I don't know if Corey said it, but we're trying to be the champion of the independent developer. Independent developers currently cannot build these MMOGs just because of the technology constraints and the budget constraints. We want to get those independent guys to download our stuff, and it's free, so they can do that, and see what they come up with. Now, some guys are going to create stuff that's not interesting to anybody except them and their friends.
There'll always be wacky stuff out
there. But other people, I think, have a lot of creativity and can try new things, build specialized niche kind of environments.
And use open source business or technical models to create growth.
Yes.
So one guy starts something for, say, $10,000, gets a little following, tells his friend, he jumps in, he's developing. Next thing you know, it's out in Asia, it's global. Next thing you know, you have a grassroots, organically grown community.
I think we'll see coordination and cooperation among these independent developers, too. Well, I've seen some independent games where there were six or seven developers. None of them lived in the same city. They coordinated it all over the Internet. And I think we'll see that here, where somebody could build an island, let's say. somebody else builds another island, and they agree to share models, share an economy, and build a two-island thing. And then a third, a fourth, a fifth.
It's
one of my dreams, and this is a dream, is that, you know, World of Warcraft probably had 200 people working on it. Imagine a community on the internet of several thousand people that all share the same vision and want to create a really, really big world with a lot of detail in it. They could actually do that.
It's a whole new world. It's an open source world. Your model's an enabling one for people, not just making it high end, the rich play, and the wealthy $50 million backed companies. And there's a lot of money out there for these people, right?
Yeah.
I mean, $1 billion a year.
Surprising thing is the large companies are talking to us also, because they don't want to have to build all the plumbing and reliability that we're building into our servers.
You got to get a whole new licensing scheme, but don't go GPL, okay? Go, you know, the multiverse dual source.
We've actually used LGPL components. Our rendering engine is actually an open source component known as Ogre Engine. And it's also known as Axiom or RealmForge. And it's an LPGL, so we can use it without making our entire product open source. We're building on that open source community, and we hope to encourage, you know, more of that at the appropriate parts in our product line also.
All you game developers out there, Multiverse Network, one of the hot products, I think, at Demo. Bill, thanks for the podcast.
My name is Ali Partovi. I'm the CEO of GarageBand.com, although today we introduced a completely new product called GPAL. GarageBand.com is a community for independent musicians, but today we launched something very different than anything we've ever done. We've launched a consumer product for any consumer who owns an iPod. It's a product that helps your iPod behave a little more like a radio, in that it helps you better manage your existing music library into playlists of music that goes well together. And it also helps you automatically discover new music within those playlists, new music by emerging artists that you might not otherwise have heard, in the same way that you discover new music on radio.
GarageBand has worked with new and emerging artists, so how can they use GarageBand and work with GPAL? How does GPAL work with some of the new artists?
FM radio, while it's already, you know, I think, has potential to be replaced by the iPod with GPAL, for consumers, this offers interesting things. But FM radio is an incredibly inefficient mechanism for the musician. From the musician point of view, FM is the primary way in which new music gets promoted, and it's incredibly difficult to get a new song on the air. If you and I wrote a song together, for a budget of about $2,000, we could record a very professional recording of it and have it for sale worldwide on iTunes and Amazon. But we could not get people to buy it because it wouldn't be on the radio. And to get your song on the radio in the United States, you need to have a budget in the order of $100,000 per song. What GPAL makes possible is that you, as an unsigned artist, if you write a great song and you put it up on GarageBand, other listeners listen to songs and rate them. And the best music is democratically raised to the top of the charts. And if you succeed there, the best music, the best rated music, will automatically be sent via GPAL to those listeners who are most likely to like it. So if your song sounds a little bit like, you know, Nine Inch Nails, you know, or if your song is a, you know, certain genre that may not even exist on FM radio, your song will be sent automatically to those listeners who love Nine Inch Nails, who may not be getting the music they want on the radio anyway, and they'll receive it directly, and there'll be a chance for them to discover it. And so I think we're going to see a new industry, a new music industry, where the emerging artists always make at least one song available completely for free as a way to get into the iPods of those listeners most likely to like the music. Then they can sell the rest of their album to that listener, to a new fan, and potentially have a lifelong direct relationship with the new fan.
My name is John Poisson. I'm the founder and CEO of Tiny Pictures. We have developed a service for sharing photos from camera phone to camera phone with your friends, and also from camera phone to PC. The basic idea is that you should be able to share with this device amongst a group of people that you know, that you've invited to look at your channel.
When I look at my cell phone here, and we don't need to name the company and the service, you know, I'm at a loss to understand how I can circumvent the picture services that I have on my phone to use something like your service.
Well, there are a couple things to keep in mind. First, there are a number of services both from the phone companies and from third parties. They tend to range either from the basic phone company offering, which is a one-to-one push. So I take a picture and I send it to you. Then you have the picture and that's all there is to it. And then the other end of that is what's called photo blogging, and the whole range of sort of community-based photo sharing sites where you're taking pictures and you're publishing them on the internet at large and sharing the details of your life. What we've got is somewhere in between. It's basically a space that you publish photos to from your camera phone instantly, and you've invited friends to look at that. And they can look at that content either on their phone or on their PC. And they can look at it a number of different ways. First, they can install our software. If you've got a phone that supports Java, you can install the Radar client on your phone. And you'll know about it because your friend will have sent you an invitation by text message. The software will be installed automatically. It'll operate. It'll be pre-configured on your phone. You launch the software. You see your friend's pictures. They see your pictures. To take a picture, you simply click the shoot button, frame the picture, shoot it, and then click the button to put it on your channel. So it's very, very straightforward.
Now, believe it or not, though, there are a lot of people. I mean, I consider myself semi-tech savvy,
right.
Not completely, but I have no idea how to go about actually doing that.
That's precisely who we built this service for. Radar is designed for people with regular phones, on regular carriers, with regular the sort of regular compulsion to stay in touch with people that they know.
And this is the opportunity in the market that you see.
Yeah, absolutely. So we've taken great pains in designing user experience that makes friends for people like that. We built the product for people like my mom and my sister who use their phones.
And people like me, too.
And people like you and people like, you know, everybody in our lives who use the technology but don't really care too much about all the acronyms behind it and all the nonsense about how to configure it. So it's literally if I've got the software and we become friends and I send you an invitation to the software, you'll receive a text message that says John would like you to look at his Radar channel. You say yes, everything else is taken care of. Everything's pre-configured for you. Everything is installed on your phone for you automatically. It's really designed to be as painless and as effortless as possible.
What's the website?
The website is tinypictures.us.
Okay, thank you so much, John, for
thank
stopping
you.
By. Thanks for the podcast.
Thank you.